This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's hour two of this Championship Monday edition of the Lombardi Line on VSiN and DraftKings Network. This show, as always, presented by DraftKings. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. We got Will Hill in for Michael Lombardi today, which if you haven't checked out the Shoulda Bet More podcast yet, what are you doing? Great insight, great guests, multiple episodes a week, all you could ever need. Remember as well, if you miss any of this show, you can check it out wherever you get your podcasts as well. To set the table, though, Will, for the next 60 minutes, we're going to take a look back at what transpired last night with the Women's National Championship coming to a close, South Carolina getting the win and cover, as well as looking ahead to tonight, UConn-Purdue, 2-1 seeds going head-to-head with a title on the line. In 15 minutes, Jeremy Kahn, gambling and sports radio host in Baltimore, was going to stop by, talk all things Ravens, Orioles, MLB, NFL, get his pick for tonight as well. Plus NFL divisions. We're going to see which teams could be on the rise in their divisions in 2024. But Will, first off, let's just get started with last night and your reaction to the way South Carolina came through to knock off Caitlin Clark and the Hawkeyes.
Yeah, more of the same in terms of this tournament, just this March into April now as the tournament started a little later because people say, hey, it's March Madness. We're already in the like the second week of April. Yeah, everything just started a little later, but it's been a lot of favorites winning, favorites cover, and it's just been chalk. I mean, look at the game tonight, Purdue and UConn. Both teams have covered. I think UConn's winning margin has been 124 combined, and Purdue's been almost 100 points, 98, I think, where it's just sheer dominance. And started early in the tournament. That first Thursday was a lot of chalk outside of Kentucky, Oakland. That first weekend, the round of 32, the favorites went 15-1, and we're just seeing the better teams, the cream rise to the top. It felt inevitable yesterday with South Carolina, Iowa. South Carolina was just bigger, more athletic, tougher, just the better team. It was a little 1-on-5. It was a little reminiscent of like LeBron versus those Pistons teams when he was really young in his career, and it was just kind of a 1-on-5 game where it was the one star against the great team. And you know, once Iowa got up 10-0 and couldn't make that lead stick and couldn't push the 10-12 and just sustain that lead, and South Carolina erased it pretty quickly, it kind of felt, hey, this South Carolina team is just going to wear them down. And I think that's what happened. Clark got tired, Iowa got tired, and the better team won. And you know, not a lot of drama. Iowa made a run here or there, but it's just kind of been symbolic of these tournaments where the games have not been great. Let's be honest, it's been kind of a ho-hum tournament on both the men's and the women's side. Good game here and there. Like with the men's, we had Yale Auburn. We had that Friday afternoon where Yale Auburn and Florida Colorado were finishing at the same time. We had the NC State story, but not a lot of juice, not a lot of great finishes, not a ton of upsets. Just been kind of a blah March.
Yeah, we'll have to still wait and see if chalk will hold strong in the men's game tonight. But you said it, South Carolina winning and covering last night. And it was, I mean, just the rebounding effort they had, the size differential was very evident. The second chance points, the bench points, like South Carolina's bench, those girls would be starters anywhere else in the country. And they're coming off the bench and freshmen just dominating the way that they did. So, you know, we talk about Caitlin Clark's impact and what will women's college basketball be like after she moves on to the WNBA. I think a really cool part of the viewership and how many eyeballs were on this year's tournament, at least, were that you learned about so many of these freshmen that even with Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and, you know, Cameron Brink and these stars of the game all moving on to the professional levels, we learned about a lot of these freshmen like Juju Watkins, like Malaysia Fulawiley, who we saw last night. And hopefully they can continue to carry that to the next level. But a tough loss, certainly, for all of the Iowa and Caitlin Clark fans out there, but an incredible career that she had. Camila Cardoso ends up being the most outstanding player, career high 17 rebounds in the game and 15 points for her. South Carolina now, it's official, becoming a dynasty under Dawn Staley. They are, I said it earlier, an Iowa away from a three-peat, 80-1 since the start of the tournament in 2022, that only loss coming in the Final Four last year to the Hawkeyes, where Caitlin Clark had 41 points and accounted for another 20 or so with her passing. They are 109-3 over the last 3 years, Will.
Let me ask you, because you're always putting me on these spots with these ridiculous games you come up with, and no doubt, no way, should I?
Sorry, you're just kind I like of, to have fun, Will.
You're a bit of a drill, so we're gonna, all right, let's have some fun. We're gonna flip the roles here. I make Stormy B here the referee Friday night. Is that a moving screen or not? Oh, you blowing the whistle or not?
Come on. Okay. So
yes or no? It's a simple question. Just needs a simple answer.
I think it was. I think
you're blowing the whistle. Okay.
I think it was. So how do you feel
at
though?
Stormy Bonantoni. What? give your Twitter handle too, so people can
yeah,
can
reach tweet out at me all of the aggression that you feel based on that call in that moment. How do you feel, generally speaking, about officiating in the final moments of a game? Like, where do you draw the line where you say, oh, you can't make that call in that moment? Like, what's the cross off? Is it 1 minute? Is it 2 minutes? Is it 30 seconds? You tell me, Will.
Well, you just flip it. I put you on the spot and you flip it right back.
Don't you love when someone answers a question with a question? Yes.
My goodness. Like a magician. I'm always a believer. Hey, just call it. There's got to be some level of common sense, which here's the thing though. These refs have such a hard time to begin with and just like calling what's a foul, what's not a foul, just enforcing the rules properly. Now you're going to add this whole thing of, yes, that's the right call, but you don't call it there. Watching the game live and I was on the air, I saw one angle where I was like, wow, you can't call that. That was minimal contact. She raised the arm a little bit, but I can't call it. It's a terrible call. They just want Iowa in the game. And I didn't like the call. So I'll stick with I didn't like the call. But then there's one angle where you can kind of see it from behind. Mm-hmm. And it looks, I mean, you never know on Twitter what's doctored and what's, you know, what's sped up or little or whatever, what's messed with in terms of the video. But there's one angle where it's like, oh, yeah, it looks basically like she's a pulling guards, throwing a block on a sweep play where she's moving her arms, she's moving her feet. Her feet are wider than her hips. And it's like, wow, I guess you have to call it. So I have the boring answer. I'm kind of caught in between. I hated the call. I wish they didn't call it, but you can't sit here and say she wasn't moving at all. She was stationary. I'm more of a believer in like, let them play and all that kind of thing. I don't know. It's a tough one. That's why I asked you, would you blow the whistle?
It's disgusting
to blow the whistle. Here's one last thing on it though. They let a lot of contact go in that game. That game was very physical. And I think Gino made the point, hey, you could say it was a moving screen. Iowa, if you notice, didn't get called for any moving screens in that game. So you want it to be consistent with the rest of the game, I think is what people are upset about too.
Well, you know what I don't like is when people say no excuses, we can't make excuses for anything. We can't with officiating. And then you go and bring it up and make excuses.
Right. Yes.
So, you know, do what you will with that one. I just to your point though, in the moment, in real time, I thought, no way they just called that.
I
saw the first angle, was like, saw the second angle, okay, they needed to call that. Like, yes. So I'm with you. Like, it's hard to have that happen in that moment, but it is what it is. It happens. Iowa goes on to the national championship game. They still don't win anyways. So South Carolina continues their run and we're moving on. It's a tough one for the Huskies. We'll see if that translates to the final for the national championship coming up tonight on the men's side. So UConn has been dominant every single game, not only from the start of this year's tournament, but from the start of last year's tournament. They're looking to repeat. I feel like there are certainly some parallels from the women's championship where you had South Carolina, who's the dominant team throughout the course of the year, taking on the biggest star, most dominant player in the league. And that's certainly what Purdue has in Zach Edey, the big 7'4" guy on the other side of this one. We talked about how this number was moving around and would continue to. It was 6.5 in the first hour. And now as we pull up the DraftKings odds board, UConn laying 7, total 144.5.
Interesting. I'm not shocked that there's a 7. Again, there were 7s this morning. I saw a 7.5 pop up at certain books. So again, shop around. Make sure you're getting the best of the number. Make sure you're not taking 6.5 when you could take 7. Make sure you're not laying 7 when you could be laying 6.5. That is a key number in every half point. Matters. I like Purdue. I don't know how you like anybody that much against UConn, but I do think this is inflated. I do think they're making you pay a tax for UConn just because the favorites have been doing so well in general. UConn's just been such a machine covering this spread. We heard Thomas Gable in the first hour say, hey, based on a power rating, this isn't 7, but we have to balance the action somehow pretty much. And look, KenPom, Haslametrics, all these analytics sites that we all trust and we all cite, that's a 4.5 point difference in terms of their number versus the actual number, which a lot of times you say, oh my God, I get 1 point difference than KenPom. I have to bet this, or a 2 point difference. 4 is almost unheard of. So this is a tax here for UConn. And I think just based on the number, Purdue is the right side here. Purdue's still really good. I think we've kind of been tainted by them in terms of their past performances, their early exits, losing to teams that they had no business losing to, where they kind of threw us off the scent. This is still a really good team. They've got the size of Edey. They've got the 3-point shooting. They're a really good 3-point shooting team, which will be interesting tonight because, yes, they're a good 3-point shooting team, but a lot of it is because you have to double Edey and then those shooters are wide open. Probably not going to have to double Edey with Klingon. So are those shooters as open? That would lend itself to more of an under. Hopefully we get a good game. I think you're paying a tax with UConn. I think the line's a little bit inflated. I would take the points. If you're going to tell me how could you possibly bet against UConn and feel good about it, I really have no argument. So I don't know, life on the line right now, would you take or lay the 7?
I would probably, again, I say time and time again, fade UConn at your own risk. Based on this number, I feel like I would prefer to take the points than lay it. But it's why it's a no bet for me here, because of what UConn has done and has not had a game closer than 13 points since the start of last year's tournament. It's not something I can do. You even look at the game against Alabama in the Final Four where they were tied with 12 minutes to go. It was still covering. They were covering the entire game until they weren't, right? And so that's my fear, I guess, with Purdue. I think it would be really, really cool and really special if Purdue could somehow get the upset in this game and do what Virginia did a couple years ago when they get knocked out in a historic 16-1 first round exit and then come back the very next year and have tunnel vision to a national championship. Like, we talk so much about the dominance of UConn in this tournament. Purdue has also covered every single game this year. They've been a different animal than we've seen before. All the Matt Painter doubters have had to quiet down a good bit as they've made this run. I don't know. I feel like UConn wins. I think I'm probably going to have a live betting approach to this game, see if Purdue can get up early and get a smaller number on UConn. But I do think that the Purdue story would be very cool to be able to come full circle for them. I don't know. This is a tough one.
If you're Purdue, don't you float some sort of fake rumor that Hurley's interested in Kentucky just to like throw a distraction out there? Would that be out of bounds?
Somebody takes his Dragon underwear as well. So then that's going to be out the door. He's headed to Kentucky. Let the rumor mill swirl, my friend. Again, UConn laying 7 where we sit right now. Total 144.5. We'll get a best bet from Jeremy Kahn coming up next. Morning show host in Baltimore. And we'll talk about this game plenty throughout the hour. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Get ready to tee off with a special Masters edition of VSiN's Long Shots coming up this Tuesday at 11 Eastern. Join VSiN experts Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, and Kelly Bidlin as they break down the field, analyze the best bets, and uncover hidden long shots like the 50-1 ticket Wes cashed at the Houston Open. From the favorites to dark horses, we'll give you the inside scoop on every player and their odds taking home a green jacket. Whether you're a seasoned golf bettor or someone just getting into the game, our expert panel has insights and strategies to help you make more informed betting decisions. Tune in to Long Shots again Tuesday at 11 p.m. Don't miss out on this exclusive Masters coverage, vsin.com/masters. Welcome back to the Lombardi Line. Stormy Bonantoni and Will Hill with you as we continue all of our talk. And we'll see if maybe he has a bet on the Masters. I don't know. Jeremy Kahn joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line, host of the Big Bad Morning Show, 105.7 The Fan in Baltimore. Talks a lot of all sport gambling on the weekends as well. Jeremy, thanks for joining us. I guess we'll start there, even though I wasn't planning on it. You like anybody to win the green jacket at Augusta?
Diving into everything tonight and tomorrow. if you force me to pick, I'd probably jump on Jon Rahm, just because he's one of my favorite golfers and he's been Mr. Consistent. But I think there's a lot of different ways to go here. So it's going to be interesting, though.
I just wanted Tiger to make the cut, and my guy Will over here is already telling me, fade away, find any nose that you can, bet against Tiger. It's just cruel. But yeah, let's start with tonight then here in the national championship coming up. UConn-Purdue, the two top seeds going head-to-head. It should be a fun battle, but this line does appear to be a little overinflated. We know KenPom has this game 3. Oddsmakers are putting it 7 right now. How do you feel?
Yeah, I'm on Purdue tonight. I think the line's very fair to them. I think UConn should win this game, but you know, this game's actually going to come down to how it's officiated. How are they reffing Edie inside? Because this is an interesting matchup where I think anybody that's watched these two teams play feel that, you know, Klingon can match up with Edie one-on-one if they decide not to double, which could help with that perimeter defense against Purdue. But I just think he's been such a beast. He's been such an animal in the postseason. And I really expect Braden Smith to step back up and have a huge game tonight. I think he's been fantastic all tournament. Even in the game where it was ugly on Saturday, he still did a lot, hit a shot late, did some other things, turned the ball over quite a few many times. But I think we'll see that sewn up some tonight. Again, I do think Purdue's I think they're live. I'm not going to bet them on the money line, but I'll take those points.
Jeremy, any feel on the total? The under has gotten bet here. I think we opened 148, 148.5 right at the open, and it's come down pretty consistently here, 144, 144 and a half, depending on where you shop. So do you have any feel in terms of the total and anything in terms of most outstanding player with Klingon and Edie both sort of co-favorites right now?
Yeah, I mean, look, if you think it's kind of hard to get away from Edie, if you're going to be on any side of Purdue and betting, and I think the numbers, you know, you're looking at it, it's pretty fair. But as far as the total goes, I'm looking at the under here, and I always feel this way about, I loved it on Saturday in both games. And was very fortunate to get it in the Bama game, but the way that things broke down, but you know, sometimes getting to new venues and looking at the backdrop and getting accustomed to shooting there. And there is that feeling out process, the nerves that happen. So you could see one of those really low scoring first halves like Purdue had in their last game. So I kind of feel like we're going to get one of those and that this game will go under the total. But I do think we're in for a really, really good game tonight. I don't think this is one of those blowouts that we've seen before, or at least I hope not.
And that's a great point, though, for bettors, though, to remember the venue. It's State Farm Stadium, not arena. The sight lines are completely different out there when you're playing in a football stadium. Jeremy Kahn, host of the Big Bad Morning Show on 105.7 The Fan in Baltimore, joining us here on the Lombardi Line. And when it comes to last night, did you have any action in the Women's Championship? I just think it's so cool that last night, for the first time in what feels like a long time, we had must-watch TV in a sport that normally doesn't have a lot of visibility because of the star power and because of the programs.
I'm going to make myself sound like a genius, but yeah, I had South Carolina yesterday.
Way to go.
By the way, the Royals over was my favorite player and our favorite game, and it went under. And I was screaming at him with runners on scoring base or in scoring position the entire time. So it was driving me nuts. But no, look, that same thing with last night's game. I felt like there was that play right before the half that really kind of swung some momentum. And I felt like with South Carolina going in up a couple of points, and then you saw right when they came out in the second half, they drill a couple of shots. And before you know it, now Iowa's behind the eight ball. And you're just waiting for it. You were waiting for South Carolina to really kind of go on a run. You know, Caitlin Clark's impressive, but that South Carolina team, they didn't lose the damn game. And there's a reason why. They were the best team in the country. And I was going to bet on them, especially looking at the spread as well, because I didn't know if the others were going to be enough to help, you know, get past this point for Caitlin Clark in Iowa.
Jeremy, once we get past the national title game, it's a fun time of year because you go right from the Masters, NBA playoffs. And before you know it, you look up, it's the NFL draft. So let's switch gears. When it comes to the draft, what do you know? What do you think you know? Any idea in terms of what order these quarterbacks go after Caleb Williams? Any idea what direction the Ravens are looking at? What are you looking at here in the draft?
Yeah, it's funny. I thought you were going to start with the Ravens, and it's probably the most boring team to talk about in the draft, especially when they're drafting at the back end, because like they're a team that's going to tell you they're going to go best player available all the time. And I think it's been proven when they needed a tight end, they drafted Marlon Humphrey. When they needed, you know, going back to last year, looking at wide receivers or 2 years ago, Kyle Hamilton, getting him and going, hey, why are they drafting this guy? He slid to him, but now they wouldn't trade him for anyone. They think he's one of the best players on that side of the ball. I'll start with the Ravens. I kind of feel like they're going to go in an offensive line, maybe wide receiver direction. I know they have some concerns about their O-line. They traded away Morgan Moses. That was kind of an interesting, odd one. They did draft the kid Voorhees out of USC from last year that they expect him to plug and play after tearing his ACL. I think he had the best bench press at the combine, and they're very high on him, but they've got to find themselves a right tackle and some depth on the offensive line. And I feel like they need some help at the wide receiver position as well, finding another young guy to pair with Lamar Jackson. They've been matched up with a couple of the speedy guys, but you know, having what you have here now in Zay Flowers, I think they need one of those big bodied receivers like the kid from Florida State. But I guess we'll see how the chips fall. And look, with the Ravens, I would not be shocked if they trade out of the first round and go back into the second round. They do it all the time. And there's plenty of teams that covet having a player for 5 years instead of 4 years and sliding back in the first round. So there is inherent value at the back end. As far as the top end, your guess is as good as mine with quarterbacks. When J.J. McCarthy's numbers went through the roof, like it was like plus 3,500, and then all of a sudden it was plus 350. I'm going, what the hell's happening here to go to Washington? I'm not a big believer in some of these quarterbacks. I do love Caleb. I think he's 100% going number one. And then how you stack the rest of them, I'm not a big Drake May fan. I feel like I've seen this before, but maybe I could be wrong on him. I like Jaden Daniels. You know, there's for some reason, I feel like something sneaky is going to happen and somebody's going to make a big trade. And maybe it's not for one of the quarterbacks. Maybe it ends up leapfrogging to grab Marvin Harrison Jr. But I hate shying away from it. But your guess is as good as mine on this one.
That I'm right there with you on the movement with JJ McCarthy, and I'm going to have to eat a whole lot of crow if for some reason the Washington Commanders actually do draft him there. Like, I would be sick to my stomach. I think it would be a huge mistake if they did that. But it feels like he's going to be a top five quarterback that goes a top five selection at quarterback that goes in this draft, which is just mind boggling to me. As far as the Ravens go, they are -230 to draft an offensive lineman first, 6-1 for wide receiver. So low value if you think that a wide receiver might be the better player on the board when we get to Baltimore. Big picture with this team, defensively, you obviously lose your DC, and that defense was unbelievable a year ago. He's off to a new head coaching job, but you add Derrick Henry on the offensive side of things. The Ravens are the favorite to repeat in the AFC North. They're the third shortest shot to win the Super Bowl this year. Big picture, what do you think of Baltimore coming into the season?
Yeah, look, I'm still bullish on them. I'm not shying away and disregarding Cincinnati, because when Joe Burrow's healthy, we know that's an absolute animal there. And I feel like every team in this division got better in the offseason, in my opinion, except maybe the Ravens, where some people say they stayed status quo. We'll find out what Derrick Henry looks like in the backfield with Lamar. I mean, that could be an absolute animal to deal with for any defense, and it could definitely set your wide receivers up in one-on-one positions throughout the game. So I think you have to like what this offense can bring to the table. Questionable with the defense, and they lost a lot of parts, but I think they kept all the important ones. And they're still going to need to find another pass rusher to go along with the likes of bringing back a Kyle Van Noy and some of the young guys that they've been waiting for to kind of, you know, turn the corner, like OA. So there's a handful of those players, but I still think losing Mike McDonald, we'll see what happens. They're really high on Zach Moore, but I thought he was a defensive genius, and I don't throw that word around loosely. He did things with lesser than players, and I've seen all year long. He got Geno Stone paid. He got a bunch of guys paid. But I think he's a really sharp individual. So we'll see what happens with the defensive side.
Jeremy, last 30 seconds. Anything in baseball you got tonight?
Oh, man, I'm the big weather guy. I love the under in Minnesota, and I also love the over with the Braves. Julio Teheran's a gas can, and they're going to light him up. So I love it.
You're the man. Thank you so much for the time today. Appreciate you.
Anytime, guys.
Jeremy Kahn doing a great job. Follow him on X at @JKahnSports. Appreciate that insight there. We're going to have to hit the break here, but when we come back, let's stick with that theme of the National Football League, because we have a number of teams that are beginning their offseason programs today. Some of them started last week. The Ravens, among others, the rest of the 25 that have not yet, will begin in a week. So the NFL, we talk about all the time. It is 24/7, 365, year-round sport. As we go through the divisions next, which division titles are poised to repeat? Could anyone go from worst to first and exceed expectations? We'll get into it all and more on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Limited time, we're offering 2 weeks of our exclusive betting splits all for free when you sign up at vsin.com/splits. The VSiN betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public's betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Take advantage of the limited time offer, vsin.com/splits, for free for 2 full weeks. And I'm looking at the betting splits page right now for this national championship, Purdue and UConn. Right now, Will, 68% of bets, 74% of the handle laying it on DraftKings with UConn right now. And obviously, we've seen that number bounce around a good bit, but significant. I think a lot of people are just looking at what UConn has done in the tournament so far and saying, okay, might as well just follow the trend. They're going to do it again.
Sure. And especially if you've been betting them before, if you bet them once, they cover for you, you get that positive reinforcement. We're all humans. We all go through that, whether it's a positive or the negative, where a team doesn't cover for you. Oh, I'm not betting them again. They screwed me, or the other way around with UConn, where they just keep bringing you the cash and you just keep going back to them. So due is the most dangerous word in betting. Nothing's ever due. I mean, you can go forever and you know, you think you're doing it and you're not, but you do think at some point here, UConn plays a close game. Maybe they win. I mean, could still win, but maybe they win by 4 or 5 or 6 and not by 26. So we'll see. Bama was in the game for a bit until they weren't. Like you said, it was, you know, Bama's down 1 with like 12 minutes to go. And if you're getting 12, 11, 11 and a half points, you figure, hey, I'm down 1, pretty late in this game, I'm in good shape. And then they just hit these runs where very reminiscent of the Warriors with Curry, with Durant, where they just, it's just an avalanche of run after run, stop after stop. I do think Purdue will be able to hang on the boards a little better. But UConn, if they're not having a good shooting night, I don't know if they get those second chance opportunities, but fun matchup, battle of the bigs, a little old school. We don't have these big guys anymore. It's such a guard oriented game, wing oriented game. Edie versus Klingon will be fun. I'm not happy that it starts at 9:30 at night. Might need a nap here pretty quickly, but should be a lot of fun.
As everybody likes to hate on the West Coast, but 6:20 for me, Will. So I will be enjoying it. I hate to say, but I keep going back to when it comes to UConn, how you say, like, they, you know, Alabama was covering until they weren't. With UConn, I was traveling for UFL during that game against Illinois, and I had the game on mute. I'm like studying for my game, doing my work, I look up at the screen and it's 53-23, and I legitimately thought it was just a glitch on my screen, but no, they go on a 30-0 run. Like, you just never know with this team, and it's going to be I hope at least it's going to be a fun game today, because on paper it has the recipe, it has all the makings for what could be a classic with two top seeds. This is the matchup I think that fans deserve to get with the top two teams in the country. And I know you referenced it earlier, it is a bummer that Houston, you know, didn't have the health and depth to be able to get to this point, but sometimes, you know, the other team is better on a given night, and that's just how things happen. But let's go to a little football here briefly. We'll give our final thoughts on the national championship before the hour wraps, and some thoughts on most outstanding player, other things there. But in the NFL, last week we saw the first teams start their offseason programs, get underway. Seattle, Carolina, the New England Patriots and Titans, they're all opening their offseason programs today. All those teams that have new head coaches get a little bit of a head start. So before we get into all these divisions that we're going to go through in a moment, I am curious your thoughts, like, which of these teams with new head coaches going into this coming season are the most poised to have like a Texans-esque leap like we saw last year in Houston? And does Atlanta count as one of them as well?
I think they count. I wouldn't be buying high in Atlanta, though. I mean, anyone that's bet the NFL for any amount of time, I mean, the two of the parties that just drive you the most crazy that are such a tease are the Falcons and Kirk Cousins. Now they're going to join forces and you're going to have to lay like minus money for them to win a division. You're going to expect them to win 10, 11 games. I don't know. Maybe they could. They're okay on defense. They've got some playmakers. I mean, they've been picking guys in the top 10 for years. They should have some good playmakers on offense. Cousins is older. He is coming off a significant injury. That's the drive leg too. So who knows how he responds. And Cousins just always kind of makes you feel a little bit empty. And I know he was playing well last year, but they were still 1-4 last year. So he's just got a habit of kind of coming up short. Maybe that's unfair. Maybe it's not. But I mean, I don't know, winning 10, 11 games with Cousins. How many times has Kirk Cousins, he's been in the league 12, 13 years, how many times has he won, you know, 10 or 11 games? So I think you're kind of buying high on that, which I wouldn't want to do with Atlanta. As far as the other coaches, I know people like McDonald, but I just have a hard time in Seattle seeing him get past San Francisco, barring injuries to Purdy. Even the Rams are better than them. So I don't know that Seattle, with their quarterback situation, makes the leap. Trying to think of the other new coaches. I feel like we didn't have as many. I don't know. Has anybody jumped to your mind? New England's not ready to win with their guy. I don't know that there's that next Texans. Just because we have a Texans one year doesn't mean we're going to have that every year. I mean, that was unique where they were in the mix to pick number one in the draft, then they're in the second round of the playoffs. So that's not a given. That's not a foregone conclusion that we get that.
Yeah, they're certainly in a very unique situation. I'm very curious to see what Seattle can be with Mike McDonald and what he's going to bring from a defensive standpoint, because Seattle is a team that it looked like the last couple years with Geno Smith, if he can remain that guy that won comeback player of the year. I know he took a little bit of a step back last year, but if they can get some things on track, they could be competitive. That NFC West starting to get a little bit better with the Rams exceeding expectations last year. See what they do this year. What you said about the Falcons, though, speaking of buying high on them, they are a minus 130 favorite now in the division, which, let's get through these divisions here a little bit rapid fire the last 5 minutes of this segment here, because all of the teams that won their respective divisions a year ago are favored to repeat right now, except for in the AFC South. Of course, the Bucs won. They're 3-1 in the division right now. Atlanta, an odds-on favorite there. But every other team is favored to repeat. Yet, every year in the last handful, we have seen a team go from worst to first. Like, teams get knocked off of that throne very, very quickly. So let's kind of go through it here real quickly. The Bucs, let's start with them. Do they get knocked off the throne? Does Atlanta end up, and Kirk Cousins, do they meet the expectations, or do they not, like they have in the past?
So what are we at? You're asking me if the Bucks repeat? If you're giving me Bucks versus the field, I'm obviously going to take the field. do I have to pick the Falcons, or I can just pick anybody else?
Anybody.
I mean, if you're not giving me the field, I shouldn't take the field. That's not the fair way to go. I'll take Atlanta. I'll take Atlanta just by default. I mean, how could you feel good about it? I don't know that Carolina has the talent to do it. I don't like the Saints quarterback coach situation at all. I'll just go with Atlanta by default.
Okay, Bills in an interesting situation, +160 favorites, a lot of attention being paid to the Jets, the Dolphins and Jets both at 2-1, so like very tight at the top in the AFC East, Patriots long shot 25-1, but do the Bills repeat or does it go somewhere else?
I'm going to go with the Jets, 7 wins last year with absolutely awful quarterback play. I think you and I could have played quarterback for them, and I don't know how much of a drop-off there would have been, and they still won 7 games, so now you're going to at least get, you would think, a healthy Rodgers, motivated. Now, I know he's 40, but the offensive line is rebuilt. They're going to have a top 10 pick to either augment the line, get a receiver. The defense is still good. And I think the defense kind of gave up at the end of the year. I mean, once you have a really good defense and you have a bad offense, I think the defense kind of gets frustrated. I was in on the Jets last year. I guess I was wrong because it didn't work out, but I mean, we didn't see it play out. He got hurt 4 plays into the season. Maybe you could say, hey, that's part of the handicap. He's old. It was a bad offensive line. I think the Jets are going to be good. I'm a fan of Rodgers as a player. The offensive line's better. I like the defense. Wilson's as good as anyone in the sport. Be interested to see if they go Bowers, they go offensive line, but I don't know that 2-1 is like great bang for your buck with how good that division is, but I'll go with the Jets here.
I just struggle with whether or not he's going to be healthy, or a lot of those players that they brought in, Tyron Smith, Mike Williams, like are they going to be healthy? I don't know. And then even Rodgers' backup quarterback, Tyrod Taylor, has had his fair share of issues from an injury standpoint.
At least a better backup, though. That's a much better backup than Wilson. Yeah.
No doubt. But if they both get hurt, then it's Wilson again. Ravens in the AFC. In the NFC. Oh, my God. In the AFC North. Ravens.
Be nice to Zach Wilson, by the way. You're probably going to be covering him soon in the UFL. What was this? Ravens? That was funny. You can laugh at that. I can see the Bengals making a run. The Bengals have these crossover games where, remember, in the NFL, these teams in the same division have pretty much the same schedule, but it depends where you finish in your division. The Bengals' 3 uncommon games are Titans, Patriots, and Panthers, where they play those 3 teams, and the Ravens, Steelers, and Browns don't. So that's 3 pretty much layups. I think the Bengals can bounce back. They got to be better on defense. They got to keep Burrow healthy, which, let's face it, it's kind of becoming an issue now under the radar, where it's every year it's an appendectomy. It's a heel, it's elbow. He's been banged up a lot, but Bengals getting to 10 or 11 wins and stealing that division, I think is reasonable.
Since we've only got a minute and 5 more divisions to go through, let's rapid fire these a little bit. The Texans, do they repeat?
Texans, sure, repeat.
Okay, wow. After the Jags were an odds-on favorite last year. Okay.
You wanted to go quick. I don't know. Fine. Maybe they won't repeat. Who do you like?
No, I like the Texans too. +115, their favorite. Chiefs, -225. Can anybody knock them off in the AFC West?
I love Herbert and Harbaugh as a combo. I don't think they have enough, and the other 2 teams stink. Chiefs will win it again.
Dallas, nobody repeats in this division. +125 in the NFC East.
They're by law not allowed to repeat. I don't know. Eagles are confusing, though. I'll say this is the year they buck the trend and Dallas does repeat.
Wowee. How about the Lions? They made it all the way to the NFC Championship last year, +150 to repeat in the North.
Might be the best division in football. I'll say the Vikings draft a quarterback, and the Vikings are the best value there because that team is really good. And they have Flores, they have defense, Addison and Jefferson.
Last year, their first division title since 1993 when they were in the Central. Last one, San Francisco 49ers, -195 in the NFC West.
Niners.
Yeah, buddy. Let's get on that Super Bowl train, San Francisco. We're going to hit the break, wrapping things up when we return on the Lombardi Line. Final thoughts on tonight's NCAA men's basketball title tilt, Purdue and UConn going head to head.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets when you bet on college hoops tonight. Download the app and use the promo code VSIN when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Again, turn $5 into $150 if you're betting the Natty coming up tonight, which we will give our final thoughts and approach to betting that game in a moment. Stormy Bonantoni and Will Hill with you. But we're going to start this last segment talking a little Major League Baseball, because we have a full slate upon us coming up today. 13 games beginning at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern. And you have bets in a few of them, Will. So what is your favorite game that you had interest in today, your best bet of the day?
Yeah, typical baseball. We got the national championship game tonight. Why play a bunch of day games? Well, why not just go head to head right with the title game?
I'm going to pull a Michael Lombardi here. This is when you're supposed to step in and change the schedule, Will. Like, this is on you. I don't know what you want me to do here.
Unreal. I like the Yankees tonight. I think that line's a little short. That line's bounced around too. I think we're like around $1.50 at DraftKings. Of course, shop around, get the best number. But I mean, this Marlins team is not good. I know Lizardo. He's a guy who has some talent, and Cortez hasn't been great, especially in these first innings, but this is just a much better Yankee team than the Marlins, who are going in the wrong direction. I saw today Marlins were 35-1 to have the worst record at DraftKings, which is not the worst bet you can make, I don't think. They have so many pitching injuries, and the lineup's not any good. I think Arias, teams learned how to shift against him. So Yankees, that line looks cheap. I also played under 4.5 first five Tigers and Pirates. I haven't checked the updated odds. I hope that line is still there. That hook is big. If it's 4, I don't know that I love it as much, but under 4.5 first five Tigers Pirates with Keller going against Olsen, two sort of underrated pitchers. And then I did play Braves first five team total over 3.5. Teheran starting for the Braves. We had a guest earlier on who mentioned that Teheran is just shot. They picked him up off the scrap heap. This Braves lineup is absolutely relentless. So scoring 4 runs in the first 5 innings, I think it's very reasonable, and you're getting plus money to boot. Okay. So those are the 3 I like. Your picks for tonight are what?
I have nothing in Major League Baseball today. What? Apologies.
It's a betting show. You have to have bets. This is against the rules.
Okay. Wow. Words hurt. You know, sometimes maybe some folks can learn from this. Sometimes the best bet is no bet. Okay. If I'm not confident in something, I didn't research something, I'm not just going to throw my cash around willy nilly. I got to think things through here, Will. I wanted to follow up though quickly on what you said about the Marlins and Yankees, because yeah, if you bet the season win total under for the Marlins, at least early on, you are feeling pretty good about your start that they're 1-9 and just had their first win on Sunday. But with the Yankees, are you surprised at all about their start, how hot they got off to, especially opening with a 4-game series win against Houston and just kind of taken off from there?
Mildly surprised. I was high on this team, then the Cole injury and the fact that Judge was banged up in spring training. I was like, oh, here we go again. They're hurt already. They don't have enough pitching with Cole. But I thought the lineup would be much better. So I think I was right about that, where they're deeper. They're more athletic. We've seen Volpe come into his own, and Soto and Verdugo, they're more left-handed, they're more balanced, they can run a little bit. In past years, they've been so stale where it's all right-handed hitters. You hit into a lot of double plays, strikeouts, don't move runners along. They put the ball in play. They do a lot of things well on offense. So it's early, but 8-2, the Marlins coming to town. They got a chance here to get off to a nice little start. They've already gotten off to a nice little start. Plus Baltimore, their main competition in the AL East, only 6-5. So you got a chance. Look, you can't, what's the saying? You can't win the division in April, but you can lose it. They've at least put themselves in position where, hey, maybe you can build a nice little lead, and you know, you play well the rest of the month, and you give yourself a nice 5 or 6 game cushion against the rest of the division. And winning the division is obviously very important with this new format, because top 2 seeds go right to the division series. If you're 3, 4, 5, or 6, you got to duke it out in that best 2 out of 3, and it gives yourself a chance to lose another series. So like what you see from the Yankees, they can really hit. And really, the story of baseball, we talked about it earlier in the show, just all these pitcher injuries, yeah. Cole's hurt, DeGrom, Scherzer. I mean, you name a good pitcher, there's like a 70-80% chance that guy is hurt. It's really, really becoming hard to bet these futures, and it's just not great for the game.
And then follow up number 2 briefly, to go back to the Atlanta Braves. I am forced in my household to root for this team, and I felt extremely confident about them coming into the year. But then you see the Spencer Strider injury. We talked a lot about the pitcher injuries that are going on around the league right now. How do you view this Braves team now moving forward in terms of their pitching depth and your expectations?
Takes a ding. I mean, remember they won the World Series. It was the year Acuna got hurt. Now Acuna got hurt, and they went and traded for a whole new outfield at Peterson, Duvall. There was one other player they traded for, where I was like, all right, they kind of offset that loss. You can't really do that with Strider. The key is going to be Freed, because you have Morton and Sale, both older pitchers. Morton's, I don't know, more, they're both kind of banged up and injury prone. So I guess you can sustain Strider. I mean, the Dodgers, I think this gives them a leg up. It's tough because the playoffs are so random and so far away. It hurts, though. I mean, leave it at it hurts. Freed, by the way, gave up 6 runs in the first inning the following night after the Strider injury. And there's some whispers he's not 100%. So I don't know. Eventually, you run out of pitching, and pitching's what wins in October. The other side of that, though, is like all these pitcher injuries. Like, okay, you need great pitching to win, but nobody's going to have great pitching. There's just Cole, sir, Strider, mm-hmm. sir, Bieber. I mean, you go down the line, you look at Texas last year, and you wouldn't think they have great starting pitching. But with all these pitching injuries, I think it lowers the expectation. It just it makes it where it levels the playing field in terms of what kind of pitching you need to actually win this thing.
Yeah, and we have the graphic up there now. Notable MLB pitching injuries right now. Insane. DeGrom, McClanahan, Scherzer, Verlander, Garrett Cole. Now you throw in Spencer Strider, Shane Bieber. The list goes on and on and on. But that's what has happened with recent history. And we talked earlier just about how these guys are throwing the ball a lot faster, younger, earlier, and it makes life harder on you when you get to the major leagues. The Braves right now, by the way,
specializing too. I mean, specializing yeah. where they just play one sport. When you're that good at baseball, hey, it's not like, you know, in past generations, I think there was more of, hey, baseball season, you play baseball, basketball season, you play basketball. These kids are multi-sport athletes. Now it's like they focus on one thing. They specialize, they go to camps and they go to, you know,
they're playing club, they're playing travel ball. They're doing exactly. like all that different stuff from younger, 100%. The Braves plus 425, by the way, to win the World Series this year. Dodgers, your favorite at plus 310. And hard to think that the Dodgers won't put themselves in a good position with the top of the order in that batting lineup. But okay, let's go these last few minutes. Final thoughts on the men's basketball national championship coming up today. UConn and Purdue. I know we're both in a unique situation where we have UConn futures that we're writing out here. You did play Purdue plus the 7 today, which shop around if you want to take the points. Plus 7 is out there. If you want to lay it, minus 6.5 is out there. So make sure you're doing your due diligence with these sports books. But let's say no future was in play. You're not playing for a middle. You had to make one bet one way or the other. What would you do?
Purdue. I might actually like the under better, but I would go with Purdue. I just think this line's being taxed. I think all the favorites doing well, UConn doing well, covering, winning, all of that. I do have respect a little bit for the Ken Palms, the Haslam metrics that make this like a 2.5-3 point line. I don't know how you get to like 6.5-7 just based off a power rating. I think they're just saying, hey, we're going to dare you to bet the other side with this UConn freight train. So I'll take the bait. I'll take Purdue. I think if UConn can have a bad shooting night, they're not going to get the second chance opportunities. Purdue's a very good rebounding team. Edie plays 40 minutes or can play 40 minutes pretty much in these games. Klingon, it's not just a one-on-one because Klingon is like a 25-minute guy, 28-minute guy where there's going to be a good chunk of the game where Edie's on the floor, Klingon isn't. We'll see if Klingon stay out of foul trouble. I think we'll get a good game. I mean, number two team, two best teams in KenPom. Typically, that's been a good game. Last time that happened, it was Baylor-Gonzaga, which wasn't a good game, but you figure you get some sort of a competitiveness at least for a little bit. I don't think UConn runs another team out of the gym again. If you're going to tell me they do, how could I argue with you? But I do think Purdue can hang in just in terms of the size of three-point shooting. So I don't know. I wouldn't say we deserve it, but it's been kind of a ho-hum tournament with all of these lopsided games, not a lot of buzzer beaters, not a lot of upset. Maybe we get a classic night, tie game 2-3 minutes ago and we get a photo finish.
I would love it. I think it would be fun. Then you get your middle. We both cash our futures and walk away happy people. When we welcome people to the show tomorrow, we'll be beaming yes. with pride, but we'll see. I'm with you. If I didn't have anything in this game, like already, I would probably take it before I would lay it, but I don't feel comfortable laying. I don't feel comfortable taking it either. So that's why it's a no bet for me as far as things stand right now. And like I said earlier, like sometimes no bet is the best bet. Just, you know, you don't have to wager on everything just because it's there. But I know it's fun to have action in some of the biggest games that are around. And speaking of which, I know you got a new podcast out today, the Should Have Bet More podcast. You have a full blown deep dive into this game with Chris Felica, and you talk about some other stuff as well. You want to tee up what you've got on tap for the folks at home?
Yeah, like you said, I had the bear and we go over the title game. We get his pick for the Masters. We go over all these injuries in baseball and the betting implications of that. And then we get into some NFL draft. He's a big Jets fan, so try to force his hand, see what he thinks in terms of the orders of the quarterback, top 10, as the draft continues to get closer and closer. It's a fun day. I don't know from a betting standpoint what kind of betting event it is this year, because there's a lot of, I don't know. I don't look at it like, man, I got to bet this or I have to bet that, but it's fun. It should be here soon.
Yeah, especially considering it appears that a lot of teams are going to be reaching for quarterbacks. The prop's been set at 4.5, and you see most of these mock drafts predicting 6, which is very, very interesting for sure. Everybody, enjoy the national championship coming up today. UConn, if you did lay it, you probably still feel pretty comfortable considering they've won and covered every single game dating back to the start of last year's tournament when it comes to NCAA tournament play, winning by an average of more than 20 points per game and winning all of them by at least 13. So there's that. Again, spread 6.5, total sitting 144.5. We will be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Hopefully not miserable. We want to have smiles on in A Block tomorrow. Have a great day.